Hello and welcome to another episode of the CG Garage. This is episode number 224, featuring Craig Shimahara of Shimahara Illustration. And I've had Craig on now for the third time. He is here specifically to talk about a project he's doing. It is a short film documentary he's trying to get off the ground. And you'd be wondering what it's about. Craig, as you know, if you've listened to other podcasts, he runs a very well-respected architecture illustration company here in town. But he felt that, you know, a lot of things that get illustrated in the architectural illustration world is some very expensive pieces of property, houses, hotels, big office spaces, things of that nature. But he wanted to bring to attention the world of homelessness in Los Angeles. And he does this through this documentary that he's trying to do. And it's a great idea. We talk about it for the podcast, and I really think you guys should check it out. And he is also looking for help. So if you guys feel that after you listen to this, yeah, I want to be able to help Craig, go to architectureofhope.org. And there's a lot of stuff in there that you can, you know, contact him, let him know what you can do. It'd be really great to be able to do that. I think it's a really great idea, and I think that I really think that it's wonderful that Craig is trying to pursue this and get it done. So definitely go check that out. Only announcements that I have for right now is that I am going to be in Sofia by the time this podcast comes out. And the reason I'm going to be in Sofia is because Total Chaos is happening, which I am also very excited to be at. I'm going to be recording several podcasts while I'm there and moderating a lot of talks. So it's going to be a lot of fun. It's pretty much sold out at this point. So, but hopefully those of you who are listening already have your tickets, and I will see you there. Make sure and come by and say hi. I'd like to say hi. All right. And there's not any other big announcements because you know what? There's going to be a lot of announcements at Total Chaos. So, you know, stay tuned. Go to our website if you're not going to be there, or, you know, we will see you there. Make sure to come to the keynote and check out all the big announcements we have there. All right, guys. Hopefully you will enjoy this great podcast with Craig Shimahara on Architecture of Hope.
Welcome to another CG Garage, where the Chaos Group talks. You'll know it's over when the last bucket drops. We're gonna fire off rays in high dynamic range. We know that ambient occlusion is passe. Global illumination won't lead you astray. And while image-based lighting is really swell, you need to make sure everything has Fresnel.
You are one of the rare people that's been on, that's now going to be on three times on this podcast. So people will have, we will put links to, if they haven't heard your backstory, we can talk about that. But the first thing I want to do is I want to catch up with you a little bit, because I there's things I want to know what's going on with you and, you know, in your business and life. And then I want to talk about your Architecture of Hope project, because I think it's a brilliant story. But let's catch up a little bit. You know, since you were last on, you said you guys opened an New York office.
That's right.
Yeah.
2017.
Yeah.
We started just with a couple guys.
Yeah.
We're subletting from a client, an architecture office in Battery Park. That's the financial district of Manhattan.
Yeah.
And we've doubled our staff, Chris. We're up to four now.
There you go. That's 100% growth.
That's fun. I mean, there's no pressure to grow too quickly.
Sure.
And it's been great.
Yeah.
We're meeting a lot of people. The clients out there are a little different.
Okay.
It's exciting, and we're having a good time.
Great. So you're on both coasts, which is pretty cool, and also you get to be time zones are probably a little bit starting to get. Are there a challenge for you? Or?
Not so much. The whole goal was to actually make sure that the New York studio would have New York work, so that actually, because when we would do work for anyone else outside of Los Angeles, time zone became an issue.
Right.
Now we have a local studio.
So that actually helps you with your time zone problem,
sure,
right?
Sure.
Yeah. That's good. That's great. That's really cool. And obviously, you know, you've got your office here. But one of the other things that that you were doing is I went to the ASAI conference this year. When was it? October?
I think so, yeah.
October. And you gave a talk there that was really, really great about this Architecture of Hope project. Mm-hmm. I'd love for you to if you can run through that story.
Sure.
Because I think it's just such a great story.
I appreciate it, Chris, the chance to chat with you three times. It's like... It's like I messed up so bad the first two times you had to
try
to get it right.
No.
No, I do really, I'm grateful for the chance to talk about Architecture of Hope. It's a feature-length documentary on the architectural response to homelessness in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
It's a nonprofit film. It's actually a 501c3.
Uh-huh.
It is... Essentially, it is a way for someone like myself and the artists I work with to do something about this epidemic that mm-hmm. the nation faces, but particularly in Los Angeles, it's the problem is acute here.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's a film that will showcase the different architectural solutions or lack thereof dealing with homelessness. But it's not just about the built environment, the glass and the steel and the architecture. It's obviously about the people who need these, who don't have a home.
Sure.
And so when the title is Architecture of Hope, it's not just about the architectural solutions, but essentially the plan for hope.
Right.
Yeah. What are we as a city, as a community doing to try to, ameliorate this situation?
Right.
And,
right.
It's a really complicated uh-huh. issue.
Yeah.
And this film, while trying to stay away from being too political, or certainly not, we're not pointing fingers at people,
mm-hmm.
it is nonetheless a very complicated issue, and we try to really gracefully thread all of these conflicting ideas and come away with an optimistic, beautiful story.
Yeah. Absolutely. So there is a couple things that you mentioned at the beginning of your talk that I thought were very interesting. And it was, you sort of started by showing some of the work that you've done, and you worked on some, you know, very big, very expensive pieces of architecture for very rich people and very rich corporations.
Right, right. Yeah, you know, I think any visualization studio that works in architecture, if they've been around for a decent amount of time, or if they've grown to a certain stature, I suppose, you're going to get these projects, often enough.
Right.
Large projects for marquee name, Starchitect types, and beautiful, opulent projects, and that any one of us would be excited to be working on. But after 20 years of that kind of work,
uh-huh.
we're still grateful, and we still do those projects. But when you, I think at the talk I mentioned a $1.2 billion project in Beverly Hills,
right.
hotel, condo, mixed use project.
Right.
It's exciting work. But after enough of that, and when you're faced with every day seeing homelessness in your face, on the streets, outside your home or your office,
sure,
you think, gosh, you know, the industry of architecture, we are part of our charge is the built environment, and these are people without any access to housing, or the built environment has failed them.
Right.
And what this is within our professional jurisdiction to try to do something about that.
Yeah.
And can we turn all of the tools that we employ for literally the richest 1% for the rest of the spectrum? Can we do that? Have we even considered doing that?
Yeah. I thought it was interesting to try to think about, like, you know, ArcViz is, it's hard to think of how can I turn ArcViz into a something that's more philanthropic.
But we can, though, you know. I mean, I talked about how I love the stories, the simple stories of that demonstrate how powerful what it is that we do actually is.
Okay.
You know, I mean, I remember when I first started the business, or considering the business, I originally wanted to do both digital and hand drawn watercolor type illustrations, and
sure.
I was working for one of the best in town, a local artist, who's very prominent, a watercolorist. Mm-hmm. And he was showing me how he did a sketch for the San Francisco International Airport, and it was during the master planning phase, and so there was no actual design.
Right.
And the architects involved just said, well, you know, just go ahead and sketch something up for the sake of this presentation.
Right.
And what he ended up drawing in his watercolor, it made such an impression that it ended up finding its way into the actual built form. If you go to the San Francisco airport now, this kind of weaving design at in the front of the terminal was actually the sketch.
Right. But it was not the architect.
It wasn't at all. But it had captured the imaginations of the public and the powers that be. And there was a distinct element of that sketch watercolor that made it into the final design.
Mm-hmm.
And your audience will know countless stories of how the work that we do, if it wasn't for the work that we do, the project wouldn't move forward, or it would the tools that we produce, the art that we produce, is the emotive firepower you need to push projects forward so often.
Sure.
Especially
big, expensive projects.
Sure.
Right.
Sure.
You have to show the public what it's going to look like, and they can't look at a CAD drawing. And
not just showing them, but excite them, inspire them.
Yeah.
So the question is, can we use that same power and try to generate excitement or movement, a consciousness for the other end of the spectrum in terms of the housing demographics?
Right.
Right. And so how do you do that? Well, one of the ways is, there are so many solutions being batted around out there in the city of Los Angeles in terms of, bridge housing, other type of temporary forms of housing, innovative ideas, but so few of them have found funding. They're not reaching the right people, the public or the right government officials. But how can we excite people with what we do? And we can, as an industry, visualization, we can show the potential of these solutions.
Right.
And hopefully do it in an evocative way and get people to move on it. So that's part of this film.
Right. But clear in my mind, you showed a rendering you did, which you called La 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 Land, right?
Right, right.
Why don't you describe it? Because I thought like that was so clear. It's like, oh, that's something that's interesting.
Yeah. Okay. I think the last year or the year before we did a rendering of, it was under a freeway, overpass.
Yep. Very typical Los Angeles.
Right. Right. And there was a tent, that we actually, we just purchased something, but then we modified it, it looks like an actual tent that would be not something off of a product shelf. It looked worn and used in that way.
Right.
This single tent was internally illuminated the way we would do for any multi-million-dollar condo kind of thing, and it was a kind of a dusk shot.
Yep.
And the way the composition was laid out was to refer to a famous poster for this movie called La La Land.
Right.
And there was a kind of the iconic poster of that film. It is a dusk magic hour type of shot.
Yeah.
There's a beautiful woman in a yellow dress.
Mm-hmm.
The tent that we internally lit was yellow.
Right.
And then there is in the poster, there is a lamppost.
Right.
Next to the lady, and in our shot, the lamppost is actually the Library Tower in downtown Los Angeles. It's the U.S. Bank now.
Right.
The thinking there is that La La Land, the film, was obviously a highly idealized image of Los Angeles.
So, sure.
We are now, and what we do is idealize. Things,
sure.
Architecture, it's very aspirational what we do.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens when we show a homeless housing, a homeless person in a tent,
right.
in this desperate situation with idealized tools. It's to elicit this, there should be kind of a sense of unease.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this looks almost beautiful, but it's such an ugly subject.
Right.
What's going on here? You know, and the idea is that the audience should be questioning. The audience, the kind of creative class that looks at this should be wondering, well, wow, you're taking the time to make this horrible situation look beautiful. That's an odd thing. And it's true. All of my time as a creative person is used. I'm focusing on other goals, helping the other end of the spectrum. Can I try and devote more of my time, not just my skill, but my time to those with less?
Right. I think there was the fact that you basically showed an illustration. It was so clear that you were doing, you're showing an illustration, showing the skills of that beautiful image, and flipped it, right? Mm-hmm. You flipped the idea. The other thing that I thought was very, kind of interesting about it is that you called it La 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 Land,
right.
Which is, you know, the idea of you sticking your fingers in your ear and going la 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 la, because you don't want to, you want to pretend like you're not hearing the situation, right?
Exactly.
You want to live in your idealized world and not really sort of take a harder look at the tents and the tents. I mean, it is so disturbing that here, one of the richest countries in the world, and we have so many people that live in tents under freeways,
right,
in one of the biggest cities in the world, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just it is very disturbing. Let's talk a little bit about the documentary. So how did it actually go about? Obviously you had this conundrum, this that you're saying, I have to do something,
mm-hmm.
right? And how did you go about like getting this going?
Yeah, it is just what you said. It's like the idea of, well, what can I do? What can the people I work with, what can we do? We work in the architectural industry, but we're not actually building anything.
Right.
And so it's hard to contribute to affordable housing.
Right.
As a company, we do pro bono work. We can give money mm-hmm. To different charities and the like, but what can we uniquely do?
Right.
What skill sets do we have? Who do we know? What resources do we have to actually try to move this needle in our unique way?
Right.
There's a great little video clip floating around, and it's about a barber who took his razor and shampoo and mm-hmm. went down to Skid Row and gave people haircuts.
Yeah.
And that simple act just transforms these people. They all of a sudden brighten up. They feel good about themselves.
Self-confidence, yeah.
Yeah, and they hadn't had a shave in months.
Right.
And this gentleman, he had a knife, and he's a barber.
Yeah.
He didn't have a master's degree in architecture or something. He brought his art
and
what he can do to the table and transformed lives.
Mm-hmm.
What can we do as architects?
Right.
Visualization,
right.
Artists, whatever. What can we do creatively to help?
Right.
And this idea of a film to share some of these ideas of what's happening and educate and all that, it seemed like the perfect Venn diagram in that it's the medium of film, which is still a very powerful medium.
Yeah. And this is something you've been involved with because you're a filmmaker as well, and a director and a writer. So you've made movies as well as doing archivists. So now suddenly you're like, I'm going to make a documentary using film, and you know the power of what film has to do and the skill set of, you know, imagining things
that aren't there yet.
That aren't there yet. And then show people how things can happen, right?
Right, right, exactly. And, you know, talking about past films that I've done that you've actually been involved with, they've been narrative films.
Right.
And I love that. Excuse me.
Yeah.
And I won't, I still hope to do that someday, but this problem of homelessness seems so urgent. It seemed like the right thing to do is put that aside and try to train these my sights on something a little more altruistic.
Okay.
While we can.
Right.
Excuse me. The film is a feature length documentary.
Yeah.
Most films are divided into three acts.
Okay.
And so I've tied the three acts with the three Vitruvian elements of architecture. The first is Fermitas, which is a structure. I don't know if you remember from your architecture school days. Structure, right? And so the first act, we will simply describe the structure of the problem. We'll go into a little bit of the history of how Los Angeles got to where we are, homelessness-wise. Mm-hmm. Show the juxtaposition of the opulent and the those without. Mm-hmm. Just set up what this film is really going to describe.
Right.
Then we move to utilitas, which is utility or the solutions. Mm-hmm. That's where we talk about, well, here are five prominent viable ideas that seem to be, some of them seem to be working, some of them have yet to be proved out, but, mm-hmm. you know, this is what we are doing. This is, you know, this is our barbershop. This is what we are bringing to the table from as an industry. And the last act will be Venustas, which is beauty. Mm-hmm. And like I said in the onset, it's not just about showing glass and steel and architectural design and just all the kind of esoteric ideas that only architects will enjoy mm-hmm. or appreciate, but beauty within this desperate situation can be found, mm-hmm. And there will be the story arcs of the people in need that hopefully find housing and take advantage of some of these solutions and provide hope.
Right.
And there's beauty in that, and we have to search for it. You know,
But I
want this piece to be optimistic. It is called Architecture of Hope. Mm-hmm. There's so much out there that is so negative. There's so much finger pointing, and it could be so politicized.
Right.
I really feel there needs to be a voice in there to contribute to the same message, that we need to do something, but do so in a way that invigorates and hopefully inspires people.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the things that's interesting about I think it was in your talk you mentioned it that a great deal of the homeless people are not necessarily are people that have jobs mm-hmm. and have they don't have mental issues necessarily. They don't have other problems. And they have jobs. They have kids. They just live out of their cars because they can't afford rent.
That's huge. I'm so glad you brought that up.
Yeah.
There are three goals to the film. Number one is to inspire, like I mentioned, like the mm-hmm. way the barber did. But the second goal is to dispel a lot of the misconceptions that surround this issue. And one of that is a huge one that you just brought up.
Right.
When most people that haven't studied the issue think about someone who's homeless, they instantly think about someone strung out on drugs or alcoholic or someone with mental illness. Mm-hmm. The truth is that's only 1/3 of the 55,000 homeless people in Los Angeles fall under that category.
Right.
Only 27% of the homeless population suffers from mental illness.
Right.
An even lower number actually are on drugs. Now, the issue is that that 1/3, that's what we see. That's the visible homeless population. The vast majority, 2/3 of them, are what are known as the economically homeless.
Okay.
These are simply people that they have been evicted for, that maybe there's a divorce. They don't have a family network to catch them.
Right.
Maybe there was a series of health issues and a sequence of unfortunate events to people. Barely, I mean, it's so expensive here in Los Angeles, and these people are barely making rent, and one bad incident, and it pushes them out of the homeless a home situation.
Right.
Like you mentioned, 2/3 of these people, they live in their cars, wake up, they go to the gym to take a shower, then they go to work,
right,
and then they go home to their car. But they some of them don't even share that they're actually homeless. You might be working right next to someone like that.
Right.
1 in 10 college students at the community level college level, mm-hmm. 1 in 10 are actually homeless.
Wow.
It's out there. And and the reason it's important to let people know that is because one of the major obstacles to this epidemic is neighbors have such a difficult time when a new development that caters to people who are formerly homeless is proposed in their area. People come out in droves to fight against it.
Because they assume it's going to be people that are strung up on drugs or whatever.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. But really, if we can share and educate the city that, no, the vast majority are people you might know,
right?
You know, or people that you could know, you know,
right?
Or people like yourself, you know,
right? I always said that, you know, I'm only about two or three bad decisions from becoming a homeless person,
and most of us are, Chris.
Yeah.
In Los Angeles, that's particularly an issue.
Yeah,
when you consider the how expensive it is to live here.
Yes, absolutely.
Since the year 2000, if you're a renter in Los Angeles, your income has actually decreased by 3% since the year 2000. Yet in the same time period, rent has gone up 34%.
Right.
So it's, and you know, Zillow, you've heard of Zillow.
Yeah, of course.
They have so much information, and they've done a great deal of research into this issue.
Mm-hmm.
And they had this wonderful study where if rent goes up by 2% mm-hmm. in Los Angeles, there would be 4,500 people homeless like the next day, something like that.
Wow, you know?
And that they're not, that doesn't mean they're on drugs or that they have mental illness. Their
right.
rent went up. That was the issue.
Right.
So if we start proposing developments, affordable housing developments, those are the people who are going to need it. Not, I mean, you know, it doesn't mean that they are a danger to society. They just need affordable housing.
Right. So you must have connected with a bunch of different groups, and I mean, your research must be really interesting. So who are some of the people that you've connected with and talked to? You mentioned Zillow.
Sure. There are a lot of people in this space that are,
okay.
that are working. Some very high profile architects,
mm-hmm.
Like Michael Maltzen, mm-hmm. was kind enough to meet with me. He has done a lot of work in this area.
Awesome.
One of his projects is kind of the almost like the poster child for what can be done in
okay.
terms of good quality design and servicing those in need.
Right.
We have a number of clients who do this kind of work, and KFA in Santa Monica is one. Wade Kilfer was kind enough to meet with me and share all of the different projects that they as a studio are working on. But I've met with many, and not just architecture folks, but people from the city who
okay.
are really studying and more than studying. They're pushing the envelope in terms of trying to attack this issue aggressively.
Mm-hmm.
One of them I can think of is the United Way. They actually have taken a leadership position and trying to coalesce all of the disparate agencies and you know, groups that are trying to address the issue and get everyone on the same page and to form more of a unified front.
Okay.
And they've been helpful with the film.
That's great. That's great. So, I mean, can you mention a little bit of some of the things that you're, you know, besides obviously trying to get this film on the ground, you've also probably, you know, as you talked about the middle part, the solutions,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
you must be contributing some of the renderings and ideas behind this, right, to illustrate the people.
That's the goal.
Right.
That's part of the challenge right now, Chris, mm-hmm. is vetting all of the different solutions out there and finding something that's actually viable, because there's so many ideas that are more academic and maybe visually interesting or somehow conceptually interesting, but maybe will never happen.
Right.
And those, while maybe academia and architecture people mm-hmm. might be interested, I if it's not practical, if it's not going to help, I don't think it should make the cut to the film. I want to show something that actually will work and help move the needle.
Can you tell us a little bit about some of these solutions and how they will work and what they're doing?
Sure. The building type that is working, mm-hmm. That is empirically working right now, is called permanent supportive housing,
okay.
or supportive housing. And it's less, there definitely are some architectural formal moves that that are part of this design type,
mm-hmm.
but it's more the idea of pairing architecture with services.
Okay.
So there used to be a model, the model is, it's called housing first.
Okay.
So there used to be a model where you would try to find someone who was homeless and clean them up somehow, get them prepared to reenter society,
okay.
get them prepared, give them tools to teach them responsibility before you hand them a set of keys.
Okay.
Try to improve the substance abuse issues if they have one or something right. like that. Well, I want to say in the last maybe 10 years or so, mm-hmm. Certainly much more recently, the philosophy has moved to something called housing first,
okay.
which means you take the person in whatever condition they are in and you give them housing. And at that point, now they have a safe place and some consistency in their lives to then work on their issues. And so you bring them to health that way.
You flip it basically.
Yeah. You say, look, we are going to work on your problems, but we need to give you housing first.
Yeah, I can imagine if you're going to try to get someone to try to recover from substance use, mm-hmm. an example, it's like, okay, we're going to do it. And then when he's done with his treatment and you go back on the street.
Exactly.
That just doesn't make any sense.
Right.
And then you just keep waiting until we feel that you're putting them back into the hot fire every time.
That's right. And it's amazing, but it is only a recent development. In fact, there are certain charity groups that still don't even subscribe to this idea that it's more of a traditional model.
Right.
But the most large cities have.
Right.
Los Angeles certainly has. And so what you do now is you put the person in housing, and then the services are actually part of the architecture.
Okay.
So the treatment for substance abuse or mm-hmm. mental illness, they actually have full time. I don't think they're full time necessarily, but there's definitely resources on site.
Right.
It's like something like a 95% retention rate.
Yeah.
That they don't not. 95% of these residents do not go back to a homeless situation. They actually then re-enter society, move out of that to just yeah. more a normal housing situation.
Right. I remember it's actually right here in Culver City. There was a homeless woman who was, she had her shopping cart and all her things in there. It's a black woman, and she was wearing a hat, and somehow her, while she was trying to jostle around, her hat fell off. It was at a crossing intersection. She was crossing the street, so I picked up her hat and I gave it to her, and she thanked me, and she was very lucid, right? Mm-hmm. And I said, "Oh, how are you doing today? Everything okay?" She goes, "Well," said, "I just got back from the hospital. I'm schizophrenic." And they found me, and I was in a complete crazy state. And they brought me to the hospital, and they gave me the medication I needed to deal with my. She has a very clear medication she needs to take for her mental illness, right?
Right.
And she says, "And I'm perfect now." And the only thing that's upsetting is that all they gave me is this vial, and I can't. Once this is gone, I'm going to be back in that state.
Wow.
And it was a very clear conversation I was having with this woman who I know is very smart. I could just tell,
mm-hmm.
but she can't do it. Like if she just had that a supply of medication to let her get through every day,
right.
She would not be in that situation. It's just so sad. It was so clear how smart she was too. Mm-hmm. Like she was so eloquent.
Right. Yeah.
And now it's like, like you said, you just put some stability around it. For this woman, it was mm-hmm. those pills, right? Mm-hmm. But I'm sure if she had a place to stay and a supply of those pills to make sure that she could stay focused, she would probably just end up just fine.
Yeah. And hopefully someone like that will know, be captured by this kind of net that the United Way is putting together. Again, they've created a database for every homeless person, or as much as they can,
right.
I suppose. So that the information between the different agencies is shared, and
uh-huh.
They can determine who is most at risk, what are the needs, and try to find a housing solution for that individual.
How do you know where these people are?
That's the thing. Okay, there was a measure that was passed in 2016
yeah.
called Measure H
okay.
that allocates, I forget, it's like almost $400 million a year or something for services, for not necessarily architecture.
Okay.
So over the last couple of years, the city has been hiring caseworkers or field workers to, mm-hmm. to actually go out. And I've been on some of these runs actually, and
okay.
to go out and just talk to people, assess where are they, who are they, you know, are you in the database,
right?
Just help them move on,
right,
to whatever stage that they need to go to.
Yeah, I think it's really, really great. When I was in high school, so eons ago, there was a Dutch guy, I think he was Dutch, who did a slideshow, and I think it's called American Pictures. We'll look it up after this. But it was a slideshow with a voiceover narration, but really it was a documentary.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. And he showed it as a presentation at the high school, and it was about him hitchhiking through America and telling these stories, right? So, and he stayed with a lot of very poor people, but he also saw the ugly underbelly of certain areas, the Ku Klux Klan. But he ended up staying at the Rockefeller's house for a little bit. He wasn't a famous person. He was just sort of a very strange, he had a long beard that was braided. You know, he's a very hippie looking guy. But to me, it was like, it was him showing you the things that you didn't want to see. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I remember so clearly what an impact it had on me. And one of the things I think that I realized, you know, as it was very influential to me as a teenager, is that everyone has a story, like you said,
mm-hmm.
and that don't necessarily, you know, put your fingers in your ear and go la 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 la
right.
la.
Right.
When just because someone is homeless there, don't treat them like a piece of furniture.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that they may have, if you have the time, have a conversation with someone and you'll be surprised. It's just very hard because once you do that, you realize, oh no, I really have to do something, and it interrupts your life, you know?
Well, it's funny you say that because, you know, as you study the advice from these different agencies and there are different charities out there and you know, yes, you can give or you can give your time, but all of them say the same thing. At the
right.
very minimum, what you can do is smile and say hello, you know, start up a very simple conversation.
It can make their day if they feel like they're treated like a person.
Absolutely. And but you know, and I'll be perfectly honest, that's sometimes difficult to do.
It is.
You know, but it is.
San Francisco, they're very aggressive, the homeless people there sometimes, and it's very hard, you know.
Right.
So you immediately have this visceral reaction because they get very angry all the
right.
time. I know that's different and I shouldn't generalize, but it's just basically the way it feels a little bit, you know.
Sure, sure.
And you live in Santa Monica. There's a lot of homeless people
yeah.
in Santa Monica, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And it's a struggle. You try to model, you know,
mm-hmm.
Just that sense of kindness and love to everyone and model that for my children and hopefully that activity somehow grows and the heart collectively that we have as a city does grow. That's the goal,
right?
And that's one of the goals of the film as
right.
well, is that, you know, just that simple act of saying hello and smiling is an act of the heart. It's the human in us,
right?
Right? The film needs to capture that and share that and encourage that.
Right.
So that's what I mean by the final act, the beauty of it.
Right.
You know, because there is beauty in that. And I believe that, I know this sounds idealistic, but if that beauty is shared,
right,
that it can inspire, and hopefully, you know, others will join that. Will have that attitude, and,
right.
and that feeling will grow.
Yeah, I think it's really that's important. It's an important part to illustrate that, and to show the potential that's missing here. You know, let's talk a little bit about some of the architecture. Let's you know how these. If you think of like housing for the homeless, you're not necessarily thinking of really beautiful architecture, right? You think that there's a separation, right?
Right.
So let's talk about that a little bit. What do you think?
It's funny because that is what you think of typically. But
that's what you would assume, right?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, we're just going to, you know, go to Home Depot and buy some shacks or whatever.
Right. And that's why a lot of communities really come out forcefully against these proposals.
Right.
But Michael Maltzen, like I mentioned, KFA, mm-hmm. Lachlan O'Hurley, there are some Brooks Scarpa. There are these are marquee name architects, local right. and some internationally renowned right. offices that are spending their time building these homes I think my point is that they are well-designed projects. And so these homes, these projects, these developments for the formerly homeless, mm-hmm. they're invariably the newest, best-looking projects on the block, right?
Right.
Because they're not just these CMU block
exactly.
you know, fortresses. They're well-considered. They're designed. They are efficient. There's some efficiencies, of course, mm-hmm. But they're beautiful projects.
Right.
And then what happens is that the people who go there, as we discussed, are not all on drugs, and,
right.
and they are grateful for a home. They take care of their environment, their neighborhood, their neighbors, themselves, mm-hmm. and they are an asset to the community.
Right.
So property values do not decrease.
That's yeah.
Right. And that's another misconception that people think, A, it's going to be this architectural blight.
Right.
B, you're attracting the worst of the city to my neighborhood. And therefore, my property value is going to go down.
Well, let's talk about that. Where is obviously the land is expensive here, too. Right. Mm-hmm. So how do you get the land to build these places?
Well,
and you have to build 55,000. Oh, not 55,000, but there's a lot of homeless people that need homes. So that's a lot of land.
That is a lot, and that is the one of the major difficulties. But there
right.
is a there's a company called Flyaway Homes, mm-hmm. and they're working with the People Concern, which is another organization that really studies and helps people in this situation,
mm-hmm.
and. They are building things by right. So they find projects where and parcels where they actually can build without having city approval.
Okay.
Where the community doesn't have a, they can't shoot it down.
Okay.
And they're talking about architecture, then they go in with a modular system.
Okay.
And that to me is an exciting solution.
Okay.
Because the housing is very expensive here,
yeah.
and the neighbors are very vocal about keeping their property values up.
There's a lot of NIMBYs, right?
And that is that's actually the third goal of the film, is to attack NIMBYism.
Right.
Which it's not in my backyard. That's what NIMBY stands for.
Right.
And if we can, again, share with NIMBYs, mm-hmm. these people, that your property values will not go down, that
right.
these people are not, you don't need to be afraid of them, that things will loosen up and projects will be moved forward.
Right.
So that, and once that happens, then on a large scale, then hopefully, again, the hearts of people will open up and more of these projects will get moving. And even if it is expensive, people will know that it's a needed solution.
Right. But there's also, you know, I mean, what about the idea that obviously there's a lot of work to be done, including, you know, construction and maintenance and all these other things. For those who are homeless and may not have work, is this an opportunity for them to contribute, to be part of building their own solution? Like, could they be able to be part of, you mentioned that they maintain their homes and do everything else, but could they help build their homes?
Sure.
You know, I'm not necessarily saying that other people shouldn't do it, but I'm just saying it's like they could participate in this and feel part of the ownership in some ways.
Actually, Habitat for Humanity actually requires that.
Okay.
There's a certain amount of sweat equity.
Right.
Where the eventual residents, they actually do have to literally get hammers and
right.
and get their community, their family and community, and try to help physically build these homes.
Right.
So that is definitely a component.
Right.
There are a lot of different creative solutions to this, and there's a lot of money out there.
Right.
Actually, we have, at one point we had the money we needed to build 10,000 units. But again, the delays, the red tape and the NIMBYism,
right.
a lot of different factors have shot that number down, and we're hopefully we can get at least 6,000
okay.
built now.
Yeah. So how long have you been looking into this?
I think we started in late 2017, 2018.
Okay.
Well, my wife and I, it was my wife's idea, actually.
Yeah.
And she wanted to find a filmmaker to do the documentary. Like, I guess a real filmmaker.
Hey, that's not fair.
But I thought the same thing. I go, well, and you know, and at first, again, like I mentioned, and as you know, I'm interested in narrative film, and
sure.
so I didn't even really consider it. But then, as we were having a hard time finding a filmmaker to take this project on, I thought, gosh, you know, this is something I think I should do. You know,
yeah.
I think I can, and it's this is my community, the
yep.
industry that we work in, architecture, you know, the built environment. This is, we should have something to say about this.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Use the microphone that I have to try to spread that word.
I love making documentaries. The only problem with it is that you have so much footage sometimes and mm. you have to figure out how to edit into your narrative. The editing is the hardest part of documentaries. But I think it's amazing you're doing this, and I think it's really great. I think it's very inspiring that people should consider using your art as a means of creating better worlds in a lot of ways. You've chosen homelessness. I saw great animation that's actually, it's on TV, that uses an ad about autism awareness mm. that's done all in animation. It's absolutely gorgeous.
Right.
So use the tools you have to bring into light certain ideas.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, just because you're really good at ray tracing doesn't mean that you can't use ray tracing to help save people's lives.
I think that's a key message that, you know, all of us as a community of artists and visualization professionals, we likely got into this work because we had a certain facility with it or with drawing.
Right.
As a kid, we drew better than the average, you know, child. Presumably because we liked to make beautiful things.
Right.
Right. And I think I'm just saying, now let's use these tools to try to create beauty in other ways.
Right.
And beyond whatever narrow professional constraints that we've been given.
Sure.
Right. And look at the at society at large
mm-hmm.
and see where we can help. I mean, you can, like you mentioned, autism mm-hmm. or there's a community group maybe that could use your help,
mm-hmm.
A church, pro bono work for the city.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's so many ways that we can use the immensely powerful gifts that we have to help others.
My daughter volunteered for, my wife volunteered at a food shelter. You know, it's organizing food and donations and all that kind of stuff. And I was like, it's like you take an afternoon and you have no idea how much you've helped those mm-hmm. that group, right?
Right?
There's so much you can do. You know.
Yeah.
And yes, it tell you, you'll feel good about it if you do it, which is great. But this documentary, obviously, you're trying to get it made. There's a mm-hmm. lot of work to be done. There's a lot of work in terms of, you know, the actual projects that are going on. Can you tell people a little bit about, you know, how to, you know, if they want to be able to help you make this film and what they can do? Is there any way they can get in touch with you about that kind of stuff?
Sure. There's a website. Mm-hmm. architectureofhope.org, mm-hmm. one word,
yeah.
or I mean, no spaces,
just right.
architectureofhope.org. And there's a teaser trailer there now.
Okay.
And you can sign up for the email list and get in touch with us.
Right.
We are taking all of 2019 to fundraise.
Okay.
So I'm meeting with the corporate responsibility departments of different developers and architectural offices. Talking to different foundations to raise funds. We hope to shoot first quarter of next year, 2020.
Okay.
And I have a fantastic editor who will comb through all of that footage.
Yeah.
And we'd love to release by the end of next year.
Okay.
There's a architecture and design film festival that comes out. I was just in Los Angeles a few weeks ago, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a likely venue that we would try to premiere at.
Okay.
Or something like that, and
but you should look at things like Sundance and places
sure.
like that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll see. It's not. I mention architecture because that is the low-hanging fruit. We know we'll have an audience to presumably see this film.
Well, homelessness starts with home, right? So the home isn't architecture, right? And it's your shelter, and it's also your hearth and where your base and where you feel safe, mm-hmm. and all those other things. So I think architecture is the key factor here, right?
It's also my advantage. It's the community that
absolutely.
I know, but yes, you mentioned home. Everyone here has some form of home, and,
sure.
and so and everyone in Los Angeles is aware of this issue. So the audience should be broad,
mm-hmm.
but we want to start out with something that a community where we know we will have some kind of viewership, and then hopefully it radiates out from there.
Right, right. Is there stuff that, we actually have a wide audience of different people that listen to this podcast, from the visual effects world to architects to VR people, whatever. Do you feel that there's stuff that they can contribute to in terms of some of the ideas of here? I mean, what are some of the things? Obviously, you found your architecture and you found a way of visualizing things to try to illustrate ideas that go beyond the giant mansions.
Right, right.
But is there other things you think, that people could contribute into this idea? Like,
yeah. I mean, we are looking at five, at least five projects to try to showcase, and that list is always rotating. But, and if they are unbuilt solutions, then my company would do the viz on that.
Right.
But, we'd love a partner to help with that.
Okay.
I mean, we're swamped with our work,
right.
work to keep the lights on.
Right.
It would be great if people are willing to lend their time and skills to help animate something,
sure.
show how something works, how it's put together, how it's transported.
Right.
Even processes. I mentioned it's called Architecture of Hope, not referring only to the built environment, but another way of talking about it is the plans for hope, right?
Right.
And there's processes involved.
Right.
Very complicated. And if we had someone that was willing to help out with motion graphics, say.
Motion graphics seems like a huge
infographics.
Right, infographics, yeah. Yeah, that's really, really interesting. And then, obviously, you also need some funding for this. Is there ways that people can contribute to help, fund this documentary for it to happen as well?
Sure. It's the hardest part is doing the fundraising for films. And so, if you're interested or someone who is interested, please look at that website, architectureofhope.org.
Right.
And contact us, and we'd love to talk. But any interest would be welcome. If you have different ideas of a architectural solution, or even just a great story,
right.
that you want to share, we'd love to hear about it.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. That's also awesome. Well, I think this is such a great story, and I think it's so important for us to bring it onto the podcast and let people know about it, because I think that there is so much more that people can do, and it is when I say architecture visualization and dealing with homelessness, you're like, how?
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. it's really great to see that you can. And I think people just have to be a little bit more creative in their ideas of use the creative power to think about how they can use their creativity to solve things that needs to be solved,
right.
in a practical
right.
way.
Yeah.
So it's really great. All right. Well, thanks so much for doing this. I really appreciate it. It was so much fun. And then it's such a great story, and really look forward to seeing it made in 2020.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Chris. As always, I really appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.